If you own a business or run an organization, consider using IPR as part of your marketing strategy. Let us show you how to reach our loyal radio audience, advertise on our digital platforms, and even sponsor your favorite podcast. Spread the word about your business and support IPR at the same time. It's a win-win. Learn more at iowapublicradio.org/sponsors.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Last week, Governor Reynolds signed a bill, the so-called Back the Blue Act, and this new law will increase the punishment for protest-related crimes and broadly speaking, strengthen legal protections for law enforcement. This hour, a variety of reactions to the new law, views both for and against the changes. Later this half hour, Mark Stringer will join us, Executive Director of the ACLU of Iowa. Also, a legal perspective from Des Moines attorney Roxanne Conlon. And later in the hour, we'll hear views from two Iowa police organizations and from activists. Let's start by getting up to speed on the basics of this new law with Katerina Sestarek, IPR state government reporter. Hi, Katerina.
Hi, Ben.
Tell us about the main provisions of this law. What does it change?
This new law raises penalties for protest-related offenses. It puts qualified immunity language into state law that deals with basically Iowans' ability to sue law enforcement officers who violate their rights. This also expands some police protections and makes it illegal to not stop for an unmarked police car. And it's a very long bill. There's a lot in there.
Right. And those are some of the highlights. So tell us a little bit about the origins of this bill, because it's very interesting. Last year, 2020, of course, the huge racial justice protests across the country, also here in Iowa. Connect that for us. How did it spring from the aftermath of those nationwide protests?
Last year, a couple of weeks into the protests in Des Moines, the legislature was in session here, and they responded to the protests by unanimously passing a police accountability bill. So it had a few provisions in there. One of them was banning police chokeholds in most cases. So very much a response to calls for racial justice. But then after, a few months went by, they came back in January, and Governor Kim Reynolds proposed what she called the Back the Blue Act. And it had a lot of things like raising penalties for protest-related offenses, some other things that, didn't end up in this final bill. But then in that bill was also contained something that she promised she would do, which is push for a ban on racial profiling by law enforcement and collecting data on police stops. At first, lawmakers didn't hold any hearings on her bill. They kind of took bits and pieces of it, added in their own things, and then ended up with this new law that we have today that includes increased penalties for protest-related offenses. It does not include any sort of specific ban on racial profiling or any provision to track data on police stops. This is something that Republican supporters of this law say that it was necessary to show support for law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. And working its way through our legislature, how partisan were the votes in both chambers?
It's kind of hard to say just because there were so many different versions and so many different pieces that went through. In the end, it was mostly party line votes with at least in the House, just a couple of Democrats joining Republicans in support. So it ended up mostly just Republicans supporting and Democrats opposing.
Mm-hmm. We'll hear plenty of views for the rest of this hour, later this hour. But broadly speaking, outside of the Democrats and Republicans, our legislators, who was notably for and against this bill when it was being discussed and in its various versions?
Well, certainly law enforcement groups have expressed support for a lot of different parts of this new law. And when the governor signed it into law just last week, she was surrounded by law enforcement officers who, expressed their support for this. Of course, people like the head of the Iowa-Nebraska NAACP, people who have been pushing for racial justice have opposed this, and people who, worry that this will trample on First Amendment protest rights or will have a chilling effect on lawful protests again, it's just a very massive bill. So there's a lot of interest in it from a lot of different people.
Okay, thank you for giving us a quick overview to start off this hour. Katarina Sestarek, IPR State Government Reporter. Thanks, Katarina.
Thanks, Ben.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. If you've just joined us, this hour is all about the new law, the Back the Blue Act, a new law increasing punishment for protest-related crimes and strengthening legal protections for law enforcement, signed into law last week by Governor Reynolds. Strong opposition to the new law from the American Civil Liberties Union. Mark Stringer is with us, Executive Director of the ACLU of Iowa. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Ben.
In signing this bill into law, Governor Reynolds said, quote, "We encourage First Amendment rights to protest peacefully, but if you break the law, you're going to be held accountable." So what is the matter, in your view, in the ACLU's view, with these changes?
Well, you know, it's the spirit of this law that's disturbing, firstly. And that is that for these years, the ACLU and other advocates have been working with lawmakers to pass meaningful racial profiling legislation. And, you know, we were getting close. We were getting promises from lawmakers that they were going to pursue this priority. And instead, this legislative session, we got this law, which we think is clearly an effort to shut down public criticism of abuses by law enforcement. We are seriously concerned about the ways in which this law may be enforced and the ways it will actually limit protests. We think it's an anti-protest law. And so that's why we're most disturbed.
Mm-hmm. Give me an example of what you see. I mean, some more details here. This raises the penalties for protest-related offenses, puts qualified immunity language into state law, expands some police protections. Those are a few that involve protests. So how does this limit protests, in your view, specifically? Give me an example, a situation.
Yeah, well, I think without getting into hypotheticals, I can say that, reiterate, really, that Iowans have a fundamental right to peaceful protest. And while the plain text of the law doesn't criminalize lawful protest, protesters and Iowans, frankly, saw firsthand last summer that police sometimes respond to lawful protest by arresting protesters with little or no basis. This was shown by scores of arrests of BLM protesters, even journalists, whose criminal charges were later dropped by prosecutors or whose cases ended in acquittals because there was simply no evidence against them. And we think, and I think it's clear, that lawmakers know that these new penalties and crimes in this law are going to intimidate those who want to exercise their right to protest, while understanding that in doing so, they're going to risk unlawful police violence and arrest. So we think that this law intends to stifle lawful protest, and therefore it is nothing less than an attack on free speech in our state.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you, how do you think this will change the nature of peaceful protest in Iowa? Governor Reynolds says, you're fine if you protest peacefully, but if you break the law, you're going to be held accountable. So tell me, what is the problem with peaceful protest and this law?
If this law, as it's enforced, actually intimidates peaceful protest, keeps protesters from being able to exercise their First Amendment rights, then that's a problem. And we're going to be paying attention to see how it's enforced, to see how this does inhibit protest. And we're going to be concerned about it, and we'll litigate as necessary.
Mm-hmm. How do you explain, Mark, that this law, the Back the Blue Act, sprang from last year's peaceful protests?
Well, it's definitely frustrating that this law, which curbs police accountability, came in direct response to thousands of peaceful protesters who have been protesting excessive force and abuse by police. So thousands of Iowans came out to say, we don't like the status quo. And so this law basically doubles down and the status quo and creates enhanced penalties for people exercising their First Amendment rights in certain ways. And that's a problem. It's disappointing and it's unacceptable that just one short year after this bipartisan discussion of second chances and promises to work on police reform and racial justice, that this is what the legislature and governor did instead. Mm-hmm. Elected officials should keep their promises.
And what do you think is motivating this departure from what you say is sort of a meeting of the minds and agreement that you saw here, or an answer to the protests?
It's hard for me to understand their mindset, and I won't try to do that, but I will say the impact is that it makes Iowa a less welcoming state. It makes Iowa a place where it's more difficult for citizens to exercise their First Amendment rights to critique police abuse.
Mm-hmm. Does this law then make Iowa any different than other states? How does it compare to similar laws in other states?
I'm not exactly sure about the nuances of the bill. I'm really laser focused, and we are as an office are laser focused on the ways that this law will inhibit protest in our state. We really believe it is an anti-protest law.
Okay. You say you'll be watching things going forward. What recourse will you pursue should there be protests? What will you be watching for specifically?
Really just trying to see how this law is enforced. Are there protesters whose First Amendment rights are being curbed by the way this law is enforced? And as we always do as an office, we are paying attention. We don't always bring legal action, but we're always paying attention. And if we think there's a way in which we can bring legal action that will make our state better, it will protect people's constitutional, particularly their First Amendment rights, we'll be on that.
Mm-hmm. Are you in favor of the part of this new law that puts qualified immunity language into state law for law enforcement? Do you have concerns for that?
Well, anytime you're giving police even less accountability than they already have, in this case, by codifying broad immunity for many state law claims brought by those who are harmed by police actions, that's a concern to us. This is a time when police need more accountability, not less.
Okay, Mark Stringer, Executive Director of the ACLU of Iowa, thank you for your views.
Thank you.
We're listening to different views this hour to the new Iowa law known as the Back the Blue Act, an increasing punishment for protest-related crimes, strengthening legal protections for law enforcement. Let's get a legal perspective from a well-known Des Moines area trial lawyer, also a former U.S. attorney, experience that speaks to both sides of this equation, so to speak. Roxanne Conlon is with us. She served as United States Attorney for the Southern District of Iowa from 1977 to 1981. And our listeners will know her also as a Democrat, a candidate for governor in 82, for U.S. Senate in 2010. Roxanne Conlon, welcome back to our program. Roxanne Conlon, are you there?
I've been good. How are you?
I am fine. Now we're hearing you just fine. We had a little bit of a hiccup there, but we're hearing you just fine. React broadly, if you could, Roxanne, to the Back the Blue Act and the fact that it grew out of the racial justice protests of last year.
I find it a cruel irony that this is what resulted from those protests, and it is a hodgepodge of things, good and bad. I have no problem at all with the provisions dealing with health benefits for police officers and workers' compensation and things and civil service changes, but the major change is changing qualified immunity and putting that into the law of Iowa. One of the things you did not discuss with Mark is the fact that peaceful protesters can be mowed down in the street by an automobile or a truck, and they won't be able to sue, because this law grants immunity to people who are to people who run over peaceful protesters, peaceful demonstrators. That is an outrage.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of parts of this bill that we don't get to talk about in depth. You mentioned that civil immunity. From a legal perspective, does that just change? Talk about that a little bit more, because this grants civil immunity to drivers of vehicles who injure someone who is blocking traffic while engaging in disorderly conduct or participating in a protest without a permit. So the driver must exercise, I understand, due care at the time, not engaging in reckless or willful misconduct. So I wonder if your characterization of it is correct.
Well, I'm pretty sure it is, because in fact, due care is prove. The question is, how does one prove in court that the driver intended to mow down a protester? Let's say the driver speeds up and hits a number of protesters, and the defense is, my gas pedal stuck. It will be, in practice, almost certainly interpreted as complete immunity. That's what I think will happen, and that is what has happened with respect to the so-called qualified immunity. In federal court, that has been the standard for a long time, which is just one of the reasons I try to avoid federal court. But it has been enforced in practice as absolute immunity for police officers, no matter what they do, civil immunity from damages. And it's important to know, Ben, that the civil damages are usually paid by the employer of the police officer, not by the police officer himself or herself, but it is still a deterrent to bad conduct if a police officer can be held liable personally for bad acts, wrongful acts, torts. Mm-hmm.
Do you see this as, and I'm sure our law enforcement in the second half hour will dispute this, do you see this as in any way protecting bad cops more than they were before?
Yes, of course. Absolutely. The Iowa standard was all due care. That's what the Baldwin case under the Iowa Supreme Court decided, the Baldwin case, just a couple of years ago, and declined to adopt the federal qualified immunity standard. Then the legislature put it into this hodgepodge, this law, and it basically says that the right, privilege, or immunity secured by law was not clearly established at the time of the deprivation, or the law was not sufficiently clear so that every single reasonable employee would have understood that the conduct was a violation of the law. That's what it says. And I know that's kind of in the weeds, but what it basically means is if the exact same thing has not already been declared by a court of law to be illegal, then the police officer who does it, not like an ordinary human being who has no such immunity. If you knock down your neighbor, you're going to be liable for it. But a police officer who stands on the back of a protester, will that be deemed to be immune from civil liability? Yes, unless there is a court of law that's already said standing on the back of a protester is illegal. If the police officer reaches into an open window of a car and pulls the driver out of the window, does that deprive the driver of rights already clearly established in the law? It's not a squishy standard at all. It is basically police officers are immune. The end.
Let's talk about provision of the law that raises the penalties for rioting to a felony, or raises penalties for unlawful assembly to aggravated misdemeanor, and expands the definition of charges, including criminal mischief, disorderly conduct, assault, and harassment. How do you see that from your legal perspective?
I'm not a criminal lawyer anymore. I was a prosecutor for many, many years. But I do see that as an effort on the part of the Iowa legislature and the governor to be seen as tough on crime. And it shouldn't be a crime to protest. It shouldn't be a crime to demonstrate. We have those rights protected by the Iowa Constitution, and to criminalize behavior that was not previously criminalized is a very bad way to proceed, particularly in light of the fact that this was supposed to be helpful to people, to protesters, to people particularly who were protesting the death of George Floyd.
Mm-hmm. What other areas of concern do you have, Roxanne Conlon, from your view? That there are many parts of this bill. Some you mentioned the benefits to officers, workers' compensation, health insurance, and so forth. Not a concern of yours. What is?
Not at all.
What else is on your list of concerns here in this new law?
The fact that alluding or attempting to allude, which is a crime, if a police officer turns on his or her lights and siren, you're supposed to pull over.
Mm-hmm.
That is a police officer up to this point in time who is in a marked police vehicle and wearing a uniform. That is what the law used to be. The law has been changed in this bill to say that you must pull over for an unmarked car and a person who's not even in a uniform. You must pull over. I'm sure that your listeners are probably aware that you can get all the accoutrements of law enforcement, the siren, the lights, the uniform, the badge, off the internet. This is this certainly makes it easier for serial rapists to find their victims. I can hardly believe that the Iowa legislature passed this law that is so enormously harmful. And I want to tell your listeners, don't do this. If someone in an unmarked police car, not in a uniform, has a siren on top of the car and a flashing light, do not pull over. Don't drive to an area where there are other people around. And if it is in fact an officer, then you can explain to him that I told you to do it.
And you are telling Iowans right now to defy this new law, at least in a certain way, that if you have an unmarked car that puts a light on it or has one of these lights through the windscreen, and you're in a secluded area, do not pull over for that person.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Too dangerous for women to do that, and the legislature should not have passed the law, but given the fact that they did, stop as soon as you can. Stop when there are other people around. Stop at a gas station or a grocery store or someplace like that. But don't stop in the middle of nowhere. Don't stop.
Okay. We have about a minute left, less than a minute. Roxanne Conlon, any other reactions to this new law before we have to say goodbye?
Well, I think that there are some other really bad parts. The state can deny state funds to any local entity that has not followed exactly what they wanted it to do. I think that's probably directed at the Des Moines School District, who did not go back into session upon the order of Kim Reynolds, because the school board thought it would be dangerous to the children in the Des Moines School District. This law specifically authorizes all the agencies of state government to deprive the Des Moines School District of all of the funds that come from the state. I think that's just pretty much clearly unconstitutional. I also think that the attempt to codify qualified immunity is likely to be held unconstitutional at some point along the way, because it is different than what the Iowa Supreme Court already decided the Iowa Constitution.
Roxanne Conlon, we have to leave now. Time is unforgiving that way. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Former U.S. attorney, civil rights lawyer from Des Moines, currently Roxanne Conlon. Ben Kiefer back with more in just a moment.
Iowa is known far and wide for corn and soybeans, but those of us who live here know that Iowa is so much more. I'm Charity Nebbe. From agriculture to high culture, each day on Talk of Iowa, I talk to farmers, artists, authors, musicians, scientists, athletes, and others who make Iowa what it is. Talk of Iowa, weekday mornings at 10 on Iowa Public Radio.
We're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Last week, Governor Reynolds signed the so-called Back the Blue Act. It's a new law that increases the punishment for protest-related crimes, also strengthens legal protections for law enforcement. It will make, for instance, rioting a felony in Iowa as opposed to a misdemeanor, also increasing legal penalties for blocking streets or highways. A lot of parts of this law to talk about this hour, a variety of reactions to the new law. Later in this half hour, we'll have some organizers from Des Moines react. But for the next few minutes, two perspectives from law enforcement. Joining us, Alita Davis is president of the Iowa State Fraternal Order of Police. Alita, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Also with the Iowa State Fraternal Order of Police, Skyler Limkeman. He is general counsel and also for the union and also attorney at Smith Mills Schrock Law in Cedar Rapids. Skyler, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Before we get into any details, let me ask you, what are your reactions to this new law? Alita, please go first.
Well, the Iowa State Fraternal Order of Police is very grateful to have a supportive governor and supportive legislature as opposed to other states across the country. The bill provides a lot of peace of mind to law enforcement. So there are a lot of different areas of this bill that provide that support, mm-hmm. and we're very appreciative.
And Alita, which provisions and do you see as most significant? As you mentioned, there are a lot of parts of this bill.
Sure. Part of the bill, so one of the key pieces to the bill that is probably most important to me, or one of the most important pieces, is providing confidentiality for group peer support for law enforcement officers and agencies. And the reason why this is so important is we understand law enforcement, they do a better job at protecting their communities. They make better decisions on and off duty if they're supported and in a better state of being, their physical well-being and also the mental health mm-hmm. piece of that.
Skyler, let me turn to you, your reaction to this new law and what you see as the key parts of it.
This was the most productive year in recent history for law enforcement at the Capitol. Overall, this bill has a number of different aspects of it that were very helpful for law enforcement and public safety overall. But I think that key pieces of the legislation, obviously the qualified immunity piece, the Peace Officer Bill of Rights, and the other mechanisms within the bill that will allow agencies to recruit and retain the best and the brightest. We've had a lot of issues recruiting and retaining law enforcement officers in the state, and this bill will not only aid us in doing that, but it will ensure that officers have legal protections when they're asked to do their jobs.
Mm-hmm. To the qualified immunity language in this law, some worry that it lessens accountability for police officers' actions. What's your reaction to that concern, Skyler?
Well, all this bill is doing is making state law consistent with federal law. So going back to 2017, 2018, after several decisions from the Iowa Supreme Court, they decided to make qualified immunity inconsistent with federal law. So what we've done with this bill is we've made it consistent. And now federal law is equal to state law.
Mm-hmm. More broadly, Skyler, was there any nationwide coordination to get these kinds of policies passed in multiple states? Is this something happening not just in Iowa, but across the nation? Was there coordination here?
There was no coordination with other states as far as Iowa, but overall, other states have also taken steps to improve qualified immunity.
Mm-hmm. Alita, perhaps you can tackle one aspect here and tell us why you're in support of a bill that increases penalties for protest-related offenses. Why do those penalties need to be increased? Perhaps I can read a quote from Democratic Senator Kevin Kinney of Oxford. He's also a retired sheriff's deputy. He said there are some good law enforcement protections in this bill, but some parts will hurt Iowans. In his words, he says, charging someone for a felony when it should be a simple misdemeanor, but now they are charged with a felony where it's going to possibly affect their housing, their schooling, their ability to get jobs. To be strapped with this is crazy, Kinney said. This doesn't even make sense. Democratic Senator Kevin Kinney of Oxford, retired sheriff's deputy. React to that, Alita.
Sure. Well, the organization as a whole has really taken a neutral stance on that piece of the bill. It really is up to the officer to decide whether or not that charge fits depending on the situation. And then also it's going to be dependent on the prosecutor or the jurisdiction on whether or not they they do anything with that charge. So fraternal replaces is really neutral.
Mm-hmm. What about the aspect I asked Skylar about just moments ago, the concern that some have that this qualified immunity language will protect bad cops?
We don't necessarily agree with that. Improving due process allows us to hold bad cops more accountable.
How? Why wasn't the old language good enough? And Skylar, please jump in here if you have more details and insights here.
Yeah, with regard to internal affairs investigations, just for a little bit of background, under the existing practice, a person would make a complaint to a police department about an officer. The department would assign an investigator to investigate the complaint. But the investigator may have little to no training in actually conducting an administrative investigation. What happened was there was a lot of inconsistency between agencies. So if you had one agency that had an officer at a location and then another agency with an officer, and then they both received complaints arising out of the same situation, there would be inconsistent results and inconsistent methods in investigating these cases. Also, there were no scientifically backed investigative methods, such as the cognitive interview, to investigate complaints. That's a problem because it calls into question the reliability and fairness of these investigations. There were no statewide training requirements for administrative investigations. So what we've done with this bill is we've added language to require supervisors and those doing internal affairs investigations to have training, including training and interviewing police officers. And the goal here is really to ensure that there is a fair, impartial, and thorough investigation. Because what an administrative investigation is trying to sort out is what the facts were at the time, but also whether there were any policy violations. So we believe this bill actually increases police accountability by improving the methods and the procedures to investigate complaints against police officers. It does so by employing methods such as the cognitive interview, which is backed by over 550 scientific studies since the 1980s. We've never had anything like that in Iowa before. So we're really trying to ensure that we do not have erroneous deprivations of officers' rights, that they have a fair and impartial investigation, but that also goes for the complainant and that they have an investigation that they can rely on. Iowans deserve well-trained police officers, and that doesn't change when it's an internal affairs investigation. The investigators should be trained in how to perform these investigations because they are different than criminal investigations. This is an employment investigation, not a criminal investigation.
Mm-hmm. One aspect neither of you have addressed I'd like to ask you about is part of this bill makes it illegal to not stop for an unmarked police car. Why was that necessary? Why weren't the existing laws concerning being stopped by an unmarked police car? And I guess we could imagine here these are cars that would show lights and have sirens. They are just not the traditional police cars that we think of.
Again, this is another area where Fraternal Order of Police, we're neutral on this. This is not something that we had the opportunity to weigh in on when it was introduced. So again, we're just neutral on this piece.
Mm-hmm. Skylar, anything to add to that?
No, we didn't advocate for that provision. This was a 32-page bill that there were a lot of different groups and organizations that contributed to different pieces of the legislation. And as part of any legislative process, everybody gets a little bit of something in there, and this was a piece that it was not ours as the Fraternal Order of Police, but as Alita indicated, we were neutral on it.
Okay, so tell us, in closing, Skylar and Alita, in your words, how do you think this will change, if at all, the nature of lawful, peaceful protest in our state? Alita?
I don't know that it's going to change lawful, peaceful protest. I think everybody has the right to protest peacefully.
Mm-hmm.
it may deter from unlawful rioting, but I don't know that it's going to make any difference or make any changes for a peaceful protest.
The final word to you, Skylar. What are your thoughts on that? The concerns that this will have a chilling effect, perhaps, on lawful, peaceful protest guaranteed by our U.S. Constitution?
I don't believe that it will have a chilling effect on peaceful protesting at all. I think that what the bill did was provide additional tools for the toolbox for law enforcement and prosecutors to address unlawful activities. If you're following the law, you don't have anything to worry about. The bill is targeted solely at unlawful behavior, and that is where we think that the bill will actually improve not only for protections for law enforcement and other members of the public, but overall the debate about issues of our times. If we think about, you know, the issue with blocking the interstate, you know, if somebody does that, and as this kind of came up on the debate floor, if somebody does that, and let's say that there's an ambulance trying to use the interstate to go to an emergency call, that's hurting somebody else. So by making these amendments to the current code, what the bill did was target unlawful activity to ensure that everybody's rights were followed and that everybody has their rights and that they're not trampled on. And that includes the First Amendment. It's not restricting or limiting anybody's First Amendment rights whatsoever.
Okay, thank you very much for your views. Skylar Limkamin, General Counsel for the Iowa State Fraternal Order of Police. Alita Davis, the President of the Iowa State Fraternal Order of Police. Alita and Skylar, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Well, let's finish up this hour with different views on the new Back the Blue Act becoming law, signed into law last week by Governor Reynolds. Increasing punishment for protest-related crimes, strengthening legal protections for law enforcement. Our final set of guests with their views are Des Moines area racial justice organizers, also Black Iowans. Justin Lewis returns to our program of Des Moines, founder of the nonprofit Des Moines Selma, and Charmaine Alexander, an organizer in Des Moines. Charmaine and Justin, welcome to the program.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Okay. Republican lawmakers have said the new law is not intended to limit peaceful protests. A quote from Governor Reynolds, "We encourage the First Amendment rights to protest peacefully, but if you break the law, you're going to be held accountable." Justin, to you, first of all, why is that a problem? Why? What aspects of this law do you have a problem with?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is it just feels like it's reaching for straws. From my perspective, I know leading one of the largest marches here in Des Moines, we had over 5,000 people. It was televised on KCCI and Channel 13. It was a nonviolent, peaceful march. I personally just don't understand why those protections need to be placed in there, why those restrictions and leveraging such a heavy punishment as well. What I would have really liked Kim Reynolds to do is really start building a rapport and relationship with communities that are frustrated, that are protesting, that are marching and crying out for justice and accountability and transparency. And this just sadly misses the mark. And, you know, and not just that, it's been consistent with what the legislature has done this year. They are looking for a boogeyman that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And I just pray that Iowa, we see the leadership and what they're doing, and hopefully we can adjust and ask them to be more equitable and accountable, or sadly, we're going to have to vote them out. Mm-hmm. But this isn't what we need here in Iowa. I know a lot of Black and white folks that showed up to the marches that have voiced their concerns with me that this doesn't make sense.
Right.
And it's contradictory to what we've been crying out for, and that's accountability, government accountability.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that you're aware in its original proposal by the governor, she said, you know, she had anti-racial profiling aspects to this bill, which, you know, with all the versions that were going through the legislators' hands, that didn't make it into it. So it evolved from what it was originally proposed under the governor. Charmaine Alexander, your view on this law, your concerns.
I definitely agree with Bethan. One of the main concerns is that our voices aren't being heard. I think they're so focused on what's going on as far as us showing up and protesting. And a lot of it is peaceful protesting. We never encourage the rioting and the breaking of things. But I mean, that happens in a lot of protests. I don't think that it's solely what we're marching for. But I think it's very interesting that they're so focused on backing the police instead of backing the community and the people. They're not hearing what we're saying. They're not trying to change any laws. Where are the anti-discriminatory laws? Where are the more harsh punishments for not holding up their end of the bargain as police officers and treating everyone with the same equality and respect? I don't see that happening. I just see more ways for us not to be heard and to make us look like the bad people for stepping out of our comfort zones that we're in every single day we're under fire, just being people of color. And that's the part that they're not hearing. And in the bill, there's a lot about millions of dollars for equipment. And, you know, that money should be going towards training to help them, you know, connect with the community and figure out exactly how we can work together instead of continuing to work separately.
Mm-hmm. Charmaine, will these new laws discourage you from protesting, from organizing future protests in the Des Moines area?
No. This is actually going to fuel me to go out there and to do more. We're so used to being told no. We're so used to saying we're not good enough. We're so used to people telling us that we're doing things the wrong way every day in our lives that this is just another example of that. And our voices need to be heard even stronger. We need to come together as a community, as a people, and just really get our questions answered. We need laws. We don't need things that are going to prohibit us from doing what we have our own rights to do. So no, it's not going to prohibit me from doing it, but I can't speak for everyone else. We already are having, you know, it's already a touchy subject with the police in our communities. So it will deter some. It will just the law being a law. No one wants that type of backfire for going out and doing what they have a right to do. And it gives a lot of objectiveness in what they're saying. What is a rioting act? You know, that to me is up to objection.
Justin Lewis, let me ask you the same question. This law raises penalties for rioting to a felony, raises penalties for unlawful assembly to an aggravated misdemeanor, expanding the definition of charges, including criminal mischief, disorderly conduct, assault, and harassment. With these raised penalties, do you think it will have a chilling effect on peaceful protest?
I think it'll do two things. It'll have people second guess whether they should show up. And the other thing is, it does put fear in the hearts of people. We know that a lot of these folks this summer were young folks who were passionate, who were willing to put their life on the line during a pandemic to march in support of Black lives. So that has a huge effect on that population if they do get a felony that's objectifiable based on someone else's perception. And that's scary. We know that those with felonies are less likely to get callbacks, less likely to get apartment, less likely to get loans. It's a little bit unnerve-wracking, but it's still par for the course for what has been pumped out of that legislator. As an implicit bias trainer, I have to walk a little bit on eggshells now, because now the topic of inclusion and equity is looked at as divisive. Iowa needs to wake up, and I'm getting nervous for my children's future, my own future. Because what they're saying isn't rooted in reality or truth. They're reaching for straws and trying to find a boogeyman that isn't there, when all that is needed is to show up in the community and have conversations about what's going on with policing, what's going on in our schools, what's going on in housing opportunities and job opportunities. It can be fixed. But a law that targets something that isn't reality isn't going to solve anything, and it's only going to push us further apart. So what I would like to do is call on Governor Reynolds to show up in our communities and have these conversations. Yes, it may be hostile for you at the start, but you created this environment, and now it's time for you to work to unravel this.
Okay, Charmaine, very quickly, 20 seconds, what are your next steps? Justin just outlined his.
Yeah, it's to see if we can actually have a conversation. I think it's important for especially the police force, since we see them on a daily basis, to say, hey, we're going to have a meeting at this location on this date monthly. You guys come in with your concerns and we'll have answers to your questions and we can work together. That's my hope, and that's what I'm going to be doing going forward.
Charmaine Alexander, Justin Lewis, thank you for joining us on this program.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
For having us.
River to River, produced today by Zachary Oren Smith. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Join us tomorrow for Politics Wednesday. I'm Ben Kiefer. Until then, take care.